listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Tennis.com podcast. I'm Ed McGrogan here with Steve Tigner. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. We have returned after one of our usual sabbaticals, but we come back, you know, on the other hand, with plenty to discuss with the French Open and the entire clay season, of course, behind us. We move on to the grass, an extended grass court run this year. You know, if for nothing else, I know that a lot of people love, you know, want to see more grass court tournaments. Maybe someday you'll get that elusive grass court Masters on the men's side. But just to have an additional week in between, two Grand Slams after such a long clay road, and it gives us the time to breathe, and the players too.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. You know, you don't think a week would make a big difference, but as of in the past, we would be coming right up to Wimbledon right now. There would be the preparation tournaments would basically be over, and we would be getting the Wimbledon seeds and the draw, you know, over the next few days. But now it does give you a little more. I guess it makes the grass court season seem a little more important beyond Wimbledon.
Yeah, and two players who are, I think, making the most of this season, this grass court stretch here. Roger Federer, for one, you know, he did not play the French Open, didn't play much on clay this year at all. That wasn't unexpected, given his priorities this season. He ends up playing Stuttgart and remains in Germany this week in Halle, a tournament that he has played so often and has some connection with, that they have named a street for him there. And, the other person is Dominic Thiem, who they could actually tangle again after they met in Stuttgart. It was really one of the stranger matches in terms of, you know, you think about it, Thiem ends up winning in three sets. Federer takes the first. He comes back, comes back from love five down in the second to force a tiebreak, earns a match point, and on his serve, no less, can't convert and ends up losing in three to Thiem. So I think before we get to Thiem, because we have, I think, quite a bit we can discuss about him, even dating back to Roland Garros, you know, how did Roger's return really strike you after a little bit of time off and injury, obviously?
He seemed rusty to me. Watching him there, obviously he'll get better before Wimbledon, but I was thinking, he's going to have to play better to challenge at Wimbledon. He struggled against Taylor Fritz, an 18-year-old. Before that match against Thiem, he did lead and he did come back from love five, but he lost the crucial points at the end of each of the last two sets. And I think Thiem was also just getting his, the feel of grass. And grass, frankly, he won that tournament, which is impressive because I don't feel like grass is his natural surface at all, which with, the length of his shots, he's much more of a natural on clay. For him to win that match and to win the tournament was impressive. But I also, it didn't make me feel like he's going to be a major challenger at Wimbledon this year either. So I came away thinking that Federer he's got work to do.
Yeah, and he comes right back at it this week. It is strange. I mean, to think about what you just said is, where do we really see Roger Federer as a true Wimbledon contender? I mean, it's hard to think that one more week can do a whole lot, but we're growing accustomed to this changing. Really, I think it's been a gradual but certainly noticeable changing of the guard, where Murray and Djokovic have really become the two most consistent threats on the men's tour, far and away, and really we've been seeing Federer and Nadal, having their patches of great play, but also, taking the early losses that we never saw for the better part of a decade. And, I'm not sure, how much a best of five if that's kind of a saving grace to someone like Federer to almost find his feet again. But you know, I wonder really what would be the reaction if a Federer did end up, you know, losing first week of Wimbledon, fourth round of Wimbledon. You know, have we kind of accepted that as this, you know, certainly well into the back nine of his career?
Yeah, you could definitely see it happen. I feel like he's going to need a good draw. He's really not going to want to face a big server or somebody who can overpower him. You know, he's going to want. I think that'll be important, more important than ever this year, judging by his, you know, his what has happened to him since the Australian Open. It's going to be a long shot for him to really challenge for the title. You know, if he can get on a roll and he has a good draw and he gets Murray in the semis, that's a definite possibility of him to, you know, to reach a final, you know, just to get to somebody like Djokovic. But you know, you can't discount him as a top contender, as a seven-time champion. But this year, and just seeing him in Stuttgart, I felt like he's a ways from being there, being, you know, a guy that you think can win the tournament at this point.
Now, as for TM, I mean, I can go back a couple, you know, week and a half or so, reaching the semis of Roland Garros, you know, a great result. I think a result that really validated a lot of what we were thinking about his immediate potential, and also really what we can project long term possibly. I think it was probably also the first look that a lot of viewers got about just simply who he is as a player. He's a, you know, unless you are watching fairly closely, you know, it's not to say that TM hasn't made inroads before, but this was a stage that, you know, the majors, you know, they give the platform that is unlike any other, and the challenges that are unlike any other. And what you saw from, you know, TM going through, you know, pretty close to the end of the tournament, you saw the movement, you saw just a fantastic forehand, you saw one of the better serves on tour, and that's to say nothing of the backhand that everybody also talks about with him. You know, it's a very, and what we're seeing now on grass and what we have seen before on hard courts, you're seeing, I think, why people are discussing him as probably the best young prospect in the game.
Yeah, that was just what we expected, what we wanted. I feel like if he hadn't made the semis, you might even, if he'd only made the quarters of the fourth round, it would have been disappointing. I think the semis was, and a loss to Djokovic, as badly as he got beaten by Djokovic, that was still as much as you could ask, as much as we wanted. I thought the win over David Goffin in the quarters, while that doesn't sound like an amazing win, it's a good step forward for team. He was ranked behind Goffin. He was almost down two sets. Goffin is more experienced and just seemed like he was the guy who was ready to win that match, but team turned it around with some more, you know, a more explosive game. But I think that win, while it's, you know, it wasn't a earth-shaking win, just that's a good step forward for him at this point. And to win the tournament in Stuttgart, which I don't even, like I said, I don't feel like grass is really, he's going to have to learn to play on grass with the shots he has, but to have the confidence to beat Federer and win that tournament, that shows you what a Grand Slam semi can do, I think, as far as your confidence goes.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we can't discount the effect that a great serve has on grass for any player, and I think that, you know, his all-court weaponry is going, you know, the movement is obviously really the great equalizer for grass, but, you know, in some ways, I almost think of it as, we think of young players as kind of really feeling fearless and with nothing to lose and not really, you know, not trying to specialize in one particular area as much, kind of taking on any challenger. I think, you know, a lot of great young players, you see that earlier in their careers, and, you know, gradually they come to represent, you know, something a little more specifically how it caters to their game. But, you know, TM, I think at the moment, he's just about at the point where, you know, the rankings will dictate kind of him as clearly that he's arrived. But I think at this point we're, you know, anything kind of could be, you know, could be possible at the moment with him. And I'm curious to see how he follows up this week. If he, you know, it wouldn't be too unexpected to see kind of, you know, a letdown after after a nice title run and giving him a little bit of time to go into Wimbledon. But, you know, that's another and that's another player that, based on the seedings, as we know, Wimbledon is the only slam that has, you know, seedings catered to the surface. Not that one tournament will make a big difference in that jump, but, you know, we'll get to the draw next week, but that, you know, I think Wimbledon's possibilities beyond Murray and Djokovic, you do kind of have to include him in the conversation.
Yeah, I think this shows, you do wonder about his schedule, though. When is he going to, you know, when is he going to do what the top players do and take a week off here or there? He hasn't done that yet. Team plays pretty much every week. You wonder whether will cost him, will leave him tired at some point. It hasn't really yet. He did fine at the French Open. But even there, I felt like he came in there playing too much tennis, and he's, you know, that's a possibility at Wimbledon too. He's going to play the 2 weeks going in.
While we had the French on our minds here, you know, the champions, Novak Djokovic, Garbiñe Muguruza, certainly someone that you couldn't really back with any serious confidence, given how, you know, how volatile Muguruza's play has been. Besides all her obvious talent and ability, you know, it, to me, they were great contrast and champions in that Djokovic has just represented the ultimate consistency across tennis, you know, men's or women's. You know exactly what you're going to get every time. Nothing is given away by him whatsoever. Muguruza, on the other hand, you know, really has been just the opposite, just so inconsistent, really unable to kind of establish, even though the rankings have, you know, she's very high in the rankings and she was before winning Roland Garros, you know, that didn't mean a whole lot on a week-to-week basis, even at the bigger tournaments. You know, we still saw big letdowns, disappointments, the upsets, but both of these two end up taking the French Open. And you know, I'm just kind of want to think about what we should expect, or even realistically can expect, for them on grass. I mean, the grass court stretch, Djokovic looks like he's going to be going into Wimbledon cold without any tune-up tournaments, as he's done before. Muguruza will play this week in Mallorca. There's a new grass court event there on the WTA, and that's, you know, fitting that as from someone from Spain that would play in that event. So just kind of wondering your thoughts, you know, really of these two on grass, and I think Muguruza is probably the more interesting case.
Yeah, I think Djokovic, you just have to think of him as we know what we're going to get from him. He's won the tournament the last 2 years without playing any tune-up events. He's won four straight slams. You know, he goes in as the overwhelming favorite, maybe more than he ever has before, with Federer in his current state. Muguruza, this is an interesting tournament for her. She made the final last year, so we know she can play on grass, and maybe you would even think grass is better for her than clay. But now we'll see, how does she react to this success? Last year, she made the final of Wimbledon and had a bad stretch until the end of the year, when she had a good stretch, and she had another bad stretch to start this year. So It will be nice to think that she could follow this up, this win up, with something good, something solid, a quarterfinal or semifinal at Wimbledon, rather than an early loss or a sort of, rather than feeling the pressure of where she is. I think at this point she should feel comfortable where she is. She, you know, she worked herself up to winning a Grand Slam. It's not like it came out of nowhere, sort of like Kerber. I feel like she should be comfortable with her position, number two in the world, coming into Wimbledon as the defending runner-up. I think an early loss would be disappointing, and you know, we're still looking to see whether she's a long-term number one type player, or whether she's sort of a hit and miss Kvitova, Mary Pierce type player. And this, I think, will tell us a little bit.
Yeah. And one other player that you should mention from last week, a champion who has had some success at Wimbledon herself and has the game to do so, Coco Vandeweghe. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, had Maria Sharapova on the ropes at Wimbledon, went to a third set with her. But, you know, a massive serve. And, you know, a player who, you know, that's someone who will not be ranked as high as she probably, her grass game could reflect, given, given just really how hard she hits the ball. Vandeweghe, a nice story for those kind of following, the U.S. progress overseas, besides Serena Williams, essentially.
Yeah, I think... You know, Vandeweghe should benefit from Wimbledon's grass court seeding. She made the quarterfinals there last year. Like you said, she took a set from Sharapova. She won this tournament last week with a couple good wins in there. And you can already see that she's going to need to get her seeding, some kind of seeding moved up if possible, because at the tournament this week in Birmingham, she's slated to play in the first round Radwanska, the top seed in Birmingham, so she could be a dangerous player for a high seed early on at Wimbledon, depending on where she goes in the draw. But she's one of those sort of old-fashioned players who comes to life on grass with a big, most Sampras-esque serve and attacking game that just immediately works so much better on that surface, and she looks so much more comfortable there. So yeah, she's if we're looking for another American run like Shelby Rogers at the French Open, you can. I think Vandeweghe has a good chance for that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, a lot was made, obviously, and for good reason, the coverage of Maria Sharapova's 2-year ban last week, going from when it was released to the reaction, just top to bottom, a massive story in the game, obviously. Now, a story that really broke to me was quite surprising. I'm not sure if you had any sort of inclination of this, and it happened on Sunday morning. Is Andy Murray reuniting with Yvonne Lendl just in advance of Wimbledon? Murray and Amélie Mauresmo parted ways as an official coach not too long ago, and of course Lendl, had Murray at his peak in 2013, winning Wimbledon, 2012 at the U.S. Open, also the Olympic gold medal. And he certainly always seemed to get, I think what people who believe in Andy Murray and what he's capable of, we saw the best of that harnessed by having Yvonne Lendl in his corner. I'm wondering, I guess, A, what you've, thought of this reunion, B, if this is a, if it's more kind of a Band-Aid or if you do think this is really maybe another long-term, year or two partnership. It doesn't strike me as something that could be sustained for a while, given that they'd already decided to part ways at once. But just kind of wondering your thoughts on Murray Lendl too.
Yeah, it's not quite as surprising, today, right after Murray announced that he and Mauresmo had split, he said he would be willing to get back together with Lendl, and Lendl seemed to indicate the same thing. He hadn't wanted to continue with Murray full time. He didn't want to travel, and maybe they had run their course a couple years ago. But I think it's it makes sense in the raw statistics with Lendl. He won 2 Grand Slams and won the Olympic gold medal. Since then, he's been good, but he hasn't won any Grand Slams. And you look at Novak Djokovic, who basically took the Murray Lendl idea by hiring Boris Becker, a big time player who knew how to win the big matches, and Djokovic basically hasn't lost any Grand Slam finals since then. So, you think Murray probably looks at that and thinks he's got to get Lendl back. I think the difference. I think Mauresmo and Murray were good. The one thing I thought that was different when Murray would play the big matches, especially against Djokovic in the Grand Slam finals, you know, he tended to react better to adversity when Lendl was there, and he tended to look for problems and get more angry when he was with Mauresmo. I feel like Lendl may have been better at inspiring Murray to kind of take responsibility and sort of take and feel that he should win those matches. He didn't play that way. He hasn't played that way since. You could even see it in the French Open final. Even after winning the first set, Murray faded away pretty quickly. But you look at the 2012 U.S. Open final when he played Djokovic, and it went to a fifth set. Murray took that bathroom break, told himself, now is the time to do this. You know, he had a much more positive attitude. I think Lendl kind of instilled that sense of you should beat everybody, because that was Lendl's attitude, of course. He thought he should be number one. And I think he instilled this sort of sense in Murray that nobody else has, that he is the guy, that he can be number one, not just sort of the second, not the runner-up, not the guy who always loses in the final.
Yeah, and I think and as high as Murray is in the rankings, and he's made, you know, he's passed, you know, number three and number four pretty clearly now. You know, it's so hard to picture that a player of that caliber needs a change. But when you saw, you know, I almost think back to kind of this year's Australian Open final in a way, even more so than the French. You know, it was just it was another chapter of Murray just unable to muster what was needed and really kind of wilting in a way against, you know, an opponent that he just, you know, his rival that he has had so much trouble beating on the biggest stages. And I say that even though Murray's only two Grand Slam titles have come with wins over Djokovic at the Open and Wimbledon, but you felt that given where Murray is in his career, and, you know, the opportunities are still there for him to, I think, kind of really write his legacy depending on where this takes him and where he goes in major title hunts. You know, I think it was, I have to say, as opposed to kind of starting anew, and you often see how long it takes for coaching partnerships to kind of materialize. Even that was even the case with Djokovic and Becker. They took a while to get in sync. You know, I think having these two, you know, swallow their pride, essentially, I don't know who really was the one who definitely wanted to, you know, you indicate obviously Lendl with the travel, but clearly when you part ways and then return and, you know, reunite, you know, I think it was kind of a, you know, a validation from both men that, you know, maybe this is really where kind of we belong as player and coach. And I think, you know, it gives the Murray part of Wimbledon, this coming Wimbledon, such a new and interesting wrinkle. You know, there's obviously a lot with Djokovic, you know, now halfway toward the calendar year Grand Slam. It's really the only goal left for him, you know, besides, you know, of course, passing Roger and Rafa in the all-time list. But I think it adds such a new dimension to where we're going to view the men's tournament and Murray. And I do think given how well he's played this year overall, we should really see some of the best tennis from Murray in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think Lendl, you know, he won't be able to do anything with his game, even if he wanted to. I think he'll give him a jolt, though. You know, maybe just a little more arrogance in a way, a little edge that he hasn't had. You know, I look at the way he played Wawrinka in the semis at the French, and he really played that to win. He, you know, he really felt like he didn't want to lose to Wawrinka, and he played the opposite against Djokovic. He got ahead, and he felt like, you know, you just didn't feel like he thought he could do it. And I think Lendl will help in that regard.
Yeah, it's always the biggest tournament. It's always my favorite to watch, and I think this just adds to that. Next week we'll get into a bit more Wimbledon as the event draws, you know, even closer. This week I encourage all of you to head to tennis.com. It is our 20th anniversary week. We started back in 1996 when many of us didn't even know what know what the internet especially even is. It certainly didn't know about how much it would change everything. That's what this week is about. On tennis.com, we have a countdown of the 20 matches that we foresee as ones we'll remember 20 years from now, the ones that will have the longest impact. That's running from Monday through Sunday. A bunch of other special features as well. I really hope you check it out. It's a little bit of, I guess, a little self-congratulations, but I think it's worth the time. It's been a nice little run. So we hope you check all that out, obviously. And until then, the next podcast, Steve and I will return next week. Thank you for listening, as always. This is the Tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.